I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Joining us today is Marilyn Ann Migliori, the author of the 10th anniversary edition of The Hunger Within. The Hunger Within is an inspiring interactive self-help workbook written exclusively for emotional eaters. The Hunger Within is designed to dismantle the psychological forces that keep one stuck in old behavior patterns related to food and eating. This concrete, lucid, step-by-step guidebook will help the reader uncover, discover, and disentangle the internal script that fuels and drives emotional eating. Marilyn Ann Migliori, MSRD, ACSW, BCD, is, as we mentioned, the author of The Hunger Within and is the founder of The Hunger Within Workshop and Eating and Weight Disorders. She's also an eating and weight disorder specialist. As a nutritionist and board-certified diplomat in clinical social work, Marilyn has been treating patients with a wide range of eating and weight disorders for more than 30 years. She is highly respected for her ability to help people discover and resolve the mental and emotional root cause reasons for their unhealthy relationship with food so they can enjoy long-lasting health and happiness. Marilyn, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Well, thank you.
Yep, Marilyn, I'm so happy to have you on the show. I loved your book. And in the prologue, you introduce us to Fern, an attorney, Brendan, a stockbroker, and Mary, the homemaker-turned-nurse. What do these three people have in common, and where are they in the prologue of your book?
All three of those individuals are, the one thing they do have in common is they are stuck on the dieting roller coaster, where they've lost and gained weight over the years. They've recognized that dieting isn't the answer, and they're searching out the answer of what truly is driving their eating behaviors.
I see. Now, in my introduction, I mentioned that your book, The Hunger Within, helps people uncover, discover, and disentangle the internal script. And in your prologue, you write about the life script. If you can tell us, what is a life script, and is it the same as the internal script?
Yes, the life script is the same thing as the internal script. And technically, we all have scripts. We begin writing them when we're children. And these scripts are based on the early experiences we encounter as children, the messages we receive, verbal and nonverbal, in our environments. And based on these messages and the experiences with which we encounter as children and the consistency with which we receive these messages, we begin to develop decisions that we make about ourselves and about the world around us. And those early decisions that we make come to shape this internal script that drives all of our behaviors, not just eating behaviors, but all behaviors. And when we're children, really during those early years and based on those early experiences we encounter regarding food and eating and body weight, those early years actually come to shape the relationship that we will have with food in the years to come.
Now, how do you define compulsive eating?
Compulsive eating is any non-hunger-related eating that's acted out in a repetitive fashion that leads to negative physical and or emotional consequences.
All right. Now, there's so many things that you wrote in the book that I could quote, but this one I thought was so just interesting that people really need to be aware of. You write, quote, telling a compulsive eater that finishing off the key lime pie in the refrigerator will result in so many calories is like telling someone in the middle of the sex act that without precautions, pregnancy or disease might result. And, you know, you find this approach a lot when people are trying to help compulsive eaters that it's not about knowing the facts. They know that already, but it's a deeper issue.
Yes. In fact, the frustrating thing for so many compulsive eaters is many of them know, you know, what to eat and what not to eat. It's knowing those answers and not acting on them. That's what makes them feel so desperate.
I see. And you also write about, you say, when we eat compulsively, we are not playing out a genetic role, but enacting what I call the emotional script. And that goes back to the scripts before. So it's not so much genetics, but it actually has to do with the emotions. And was there something that you would say Fern, Brendan, and Mary had in common in their childhoods that got them on the road to compulsive eating?
Well, in all of their situations, they were presented with scenarios during their childhood where food took on a certain role or significance. For Brendan, food was used as a way to sedate him and to quiet him. And so it was almost used as a form of medication. And now he uses food as a way to self-medicate feelings. When he stopped drinking, he picked up food as his new addictive substance, and he would continue to medicate himself with food when he was no longer doing it with alcohol. With Mary, her relationship with food was interesting because it really tied her in with her early experiences she had with her grandmother, who always used to bake food. It always would give her the first cookies when she baked them. So there was a special connection that she had with food, and she continued to recreate that in her adult life. And then with Fern, food was restricted for Fern. And when you start restricting food, or a child feels like foods are restricted for whatever reason, that food becomes very significant to them. And they'll find themselves sneaking food and hiding food and eating secretively in their adult lives. And it's almost a reenactment of those early experiences with the food that was considered the forbidden fruit when they were children.
You know, I'm surprised I don't have an issue with that, because my mother she was a real health nut. And she'd buy cookies, but then she would hide them in the closet so she could just give us a few. And then I would sneak in and grab some. And then when I was a Girl Scout, I would buy tons of the Thin Mint cookies and I would hide them in my drawer so she wouldn't see them. But it's so unhealthy. You know, it's just like, give your child a cookie and put them in the cupboard. Like, you know, you don't have to.
Yes. And, you know, it is common, Lisa. Parents think that they're doing the best thing, but in actuality, they don't realize that it can actually be creating a form of disordered eating in their children. Mm-hmm. And that secretive eating is a very common phenomenon that many of the individuals in my workshop, my patients, describe during their childhood, where they'll describe exactly what you're describing, where a certain food item would be restricted and they'd find themselves hiding it or sneaking into the cabinet and taking out so many cookies and rearranging them so it looks like they weren't taken.
Yeah.
It's amazing the stories you hear, but the significance that those early experiences play in the relationship that people have with food in adulthood.
So, you know, in the book, you have the program has three stages and each has four parts. And in the first week is about self-exploration, and you ask people to answer questions about themselves. And you write about strokes and put-downs. Can you tell us about those?
Yes, I have them spend one day where they're actually keeping track of the positive feedback that either they give themselves or they get from other people, and the negative feedback. And it's interesting because so many individuals, when they do actually do this exercise, they find that most of the negative feedback that they receive comes from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when we are children, we do get all kinds of positive and negative feedback, again, during our early years. And that early experience really also tends to create the emotional world that you're familiar with. So if you're familiar with a lot of negative feedback, you will gravitate towards situations and people where that will continue to sustain that emotional world, and or you'll continue to give yourself that negative feedback to keep you in that emotional environment. And what it really does do, what it speaks to, is that if you're living in a world that's surrounded with the negativity, and look at life through those lenses, that person really is hungry, psychologically hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps people begin to see, when I'm reaching for food, am I reaching for food to fill my fuel needs, or am I reaching for food to fill this emptiness or this void as a result of this hunger there, the psychological hunger that oftentimes people don't identify.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people need help with, and that's something that your book does. And your book, I love about it, is I love the workbook aspect. I mean, you have to look at yourself and answer questions, and I think that makes such a difference. So, I mean, sometimes I feel like, am I hungry or am I just eating out of emotions? And sometimes I get confused. I seem to be hungry a lot.
Yes.
Maybe I do have some issues.
Well, you know, this model of treatment can be applied to any form of addictive or compulsive type behaviors, because when that well in your sense of well-being is empty, you will seek to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
And people can find all kinds of alternatives in an attempt to meet that need. The problem is that none of them really truly meet the need, and so they'll just switch oftentimes from one compulsive behavior to another.
Oh,
and I see that frequently with the bariatric surgery patients that I see that have had the gastric bypass surgery, and I work with a pretty significant number of those patients, and they will have the surgical intervention, which really does limit their ability to consume food. And so they do lose weight, and they'll get down to their goal weight. But oftentimes what they'll start describing is that they'll start describing that they're taking on different kinds of compulsive behaviors. Well, they'll find themselves compulsively spending or compulsively shopping or gambling. So all they've done is swapped one compulsion for another because they never got in there and identified and worked at treating the script that drives the compulsion to begin with.
Yeah, that is so essential. I'm a huge believer in dealing with your past and emotional healing, and I'm really into bioenergetics and any sort of, you know, therapy that can really help you get to the heart of this. Now, for people listening, if they're, you know, saying, you know, this sounds familiar, I'm struggling with these issues, you know, I would say getting your book is the first place to start, obviously. But what other little, I mean, what would you say to that person?
Well, I think having the book on hand is definitely a great place to start because it is designed as a workbook, and there are daily writing exercises that help them kind of work through and process through the material and be able to apply it to their own situations. Oftentimes, it's also helpful to get into some kind of a support group. And there's a number of different groups available throughout the community that people can attend. I know some people that do attend the Overeaters Anonymous groups, and they've actually have found those helpful because they are in a situation where they don't feel alone. That's one of the problems here with any kind of compulsive behavior is oftentimes people feel really isolated and alone and ashamed. And that just fuels the script. So being in a situation where you're listening and hearing other people who are struggling with the same thing that you're struggling with, and often even working through some of the same material that's contained in the workbook in a setting with other people can be very, very therapeutic.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have the Hunger Within workshop. Now, is that something that can be done online, or do people actually need to be there in person? How does that work?
Right now, I'm only conducting the workshops at the University of Michigan, but I am in the process of being able to get them taped and actually have them available online, and that should be happening sometime the end of the summer, early fall.
Oh, that's
so if
terrific.
People went on, yeah, so if people go on the website, and you can actually purchase the workbook through the website, which is thehungerwithin.com, probably by September and October, they will be able to download the individual sessions and actually be able to listen in on the sessions as well as work through the workbook.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the nicest outcomes that you've seen? You know, if you can just give us some, you know, an example of someone that you've worked with.
Well, so many people describe that they find themselves losing weight without any effort because once they start looking at the script and recognizing their behavior patterns, their eating behavior patterns, they begin to start to rewrite the script. In fact, in the workshop, we actually begin rewriting the script. So the weight loss is one thing, and that's what really brings them into the workshop in the first place, is that's one of their goals, is to become healthier. But what they also recognize is the impact it has on every single aspect of their life. I mean, some people end up changing jobs or moving or finding themselves taking on and doing things that they would never dream of doing before. So they find that it's altered their path and their direction in their life. So instead of just spending their life replaying these old scripts over and over again, they're actually rewriting new ones, which is opening up all kinds of opportunities for them and various aspects of their life. And that's the thing that is so rewarding in doing this work, is seeing this transformation process with your patients as they go through the material and work with with the workshop and the workbook itself.
Oh, that's great. Now, Marilyn, could you give us your website again?
It's www.thehungerwithin.com, all one word.
Oh, terrific. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.